Before we begin this morning, I just want to, on behalf of Ward, extend our gratitude to the Second Circuit and Chief Judge Katzmann for hosting us today as part of our stay in New York, and we very much appreciate it. The first case this morning is 162362, Interdigital Communications versus ZTE. Mr. McMahon, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. 2.5 years ago, a panel of this Court considered exactly the same patent specification that's at issue today and concluded that the invention as disclosed is the use of short codes and that the short codes used for that purpose carry no data.
So what was the timing of that case, of our opinions, and when the District Court considered this case? Was there an overlap in terms of timing, or?
There was an overlap, Your Honor. By the time the court issued this decision, Interdigital 2, the jury had already reached a verdict in Delaware, and JMAL motions were briefed, but not yet decided. And the parties notified the court in Delaware about this court's decision, and the court ultimately denied the JMAL motion, and the parties then ZTE sought and obtained a Rule 54B judgment to bring this issue to the court's attention. The court should follow that precedent from Interdigital 2 and reach the same conclusion here. Having failed to prove that ZTE infringes this patent family in two successive International Trade Commission investigations.
Can I ask you about Interdigital 2? Did Interdigital in that case contest the proposition that the language of the claims there was actually limited to short codes and excluded embodiment number one described in the spec?
I don't know that
it's kind of a strange conclusion, right?
Well, I don't think it is, and I can explain why, but to answer your question first, I think by the time it came to this court, it was basically undisputed that that claim language, in that case successively sent transmissions, referred to the short codes.
So it was undisputed?
It was disputed at times. I think by the time it was argued, it was
right,
undisputed.
But I guess what I'm wondering is, if that proposition was not disputed, then what's the status of what we said about that proposition in the course of resolving what was disputed in Interdigital 2?
Well, I think the answer is that the court in Interdigital 2 looked at the two points, and I can talk about those two points, in the intrinsic record, in the specification, that lead to the conclusion that the invention is the short codes, and the short codes used for that purpose carry no data. And specifically, these two points come straight from the specification. The first point, the short codes are the invention. I'll just read two passages here. The first one is at Appendix 144.
Appendix what?
144.
In the 966.
This is the 966 patent, column 1, line 27. More specifically, the present invention.
Right, so it does say that, but then when you get to the rest, it's absolutely clear. It says the first embodiment of the invention is a whole column about the access codes, and then but the access code one is really not as good as it might be, and so we have a preferred embodiment. And I agree that there is, I mean, you might even call it a contradiction between what's said and what you were just describing and what comes later. But there's a whole column of what is described not as either prior art or an idea that we don't think is part of our invention, but is expressly described as the first embodiment of the invention. And you're saying we, maybe with their help in Interdigital 2, said, really, that's not what all of these claims are about. It reads those out.
I think that's right. I think Your Honor is right to recognize the tension inside the patent, and I think the tension's resolved by two very clear statements that refer to the present invention, the first in column 1, the second in column 3, at Appendix 145, line 19, which again says the present invention comprises a novel method, and then goes on to say utilizing transmission of short codes. Those two statements make it perfectly clear, using the language that this court uniformly accepts, that the present invention is the short codes. The second step is, what do the short codes codes do? How are they used for this purpose? And column 7 makes that clear. This is at appendix 147. I won't read the whole passage. It certainly begins with the word the preferred embodiment, but it makes clear at the end of that paragraph, the short code used for this purpose carries no data. And that's exactly what the court quoted in InterDigital 2 and relied upon in concluding that the short code is the invention and the short code used for this purpose carries
no
data.
Column 7, line what?
I'm sorry. Line 48 to 49.
Right. And carries no data you take to mean what we quoted the ALJ in the ITC case as meaning, namely, the code is not modulated with data and is not, neither nor in there. Does not modulate data nor...
Is not used or intended to be used for this purpose, I think, is if that's the language you're referring to, Your Honor.
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, neither modulated... Yes, there are different ways that this same concept has been described, that it's neither modulated by data, doesn't carry data. Does that address your question?
Yes, thanks.
Can I just take you in a little bit of a different direction? Quick question, which is, doesn't seem you make a real strong or at least detailed argument why, if we agree with you on the claim construction, there's a problem with the infringement finding. That's your position, right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I missed the first part of your question.
That if we were to agree with you that the claim construction was incorrect, that infects and changes, or arguably changes, the infringement.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. That's exactly right. InterDigital, on the same products, same common patent specification, essentially the same claim language, InterDigital failed twice at the ITC to prove infringement under the construction that was adopted in InterDigital 2.
But you're asking for a remand and not a...
Reversal would be more appropriate because it would be futile to go back for a third bite at the apple under this construction, having done it twice on these patents that share exactly the same specification. And when I say twice, what I mean is in the 800 investigation, the other two patents from this patent family, the 830 and the 636 patents, were at issue. But in the 868 investigation, the second round against ZTE, these two patents, 966 and 847, were at issue. And again, the commission sided with ZTE, found that InterDigital had not proved infringement. InterDigital appealed and then withdrew that appeal. In light of those two proceedings, this would be the third bite of the apple. We think it would be futile to...
Counsel, are these patents expired?
Yes, they have, Your Honor.
So we're just talking about damages, ultimately.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Are there suits pending against other defendants than these?
I believe the answer is no, Your Honor, to my knowledge.
If we were to conclude that there is some kind of doesn't carry data requirement for these terms, does that idea have to be further clarified to define that somewhat general phrase, so that if we were to say there's something missing, something important missing, but there might well be some work to be done in figuring out precisely how to define what implied limitation there is in there. That's my question. Or is it a very simple, carries no data, everybody understands what that means, it can't possibly mean more than one thing, so once we say that, we know what the claim construction is?
I think that is the answer, Your Honor, and I think you're referring to InterDigital's argument that there should be a remand to address the construction of the word data. And the answer to that is no, it's not necessary. First of all, data is not a claim term. At this point, we're construing the construction.
Yeah, but you're now making an argument about a limitation that is also not a claim term.
Well, from a clear disclaimer within the specification, but the specification doesn't say anything more to narrow the term data or to define that term. The specification statement that the short code carries no data is clear on its face, and the purpose behind that is really quite simple. Prior to these patents, the signal that was ramped up, the ramp up of these power ramp up patents was a well known concept, but the signal that was ramped up was a mixed modulated signal, and there was data built into that signal.
What kind of data?
I think it varied by implementation, but signaling data
that ultimately became part of the content that somebody wanted to communicate, or data about that was communicating with the setup functionality of the central network.
I think more the latter, Your Honor, although I'm not sure I can universally speak to all implementations, but more the latter, setup data, not your voice, not your email, not that type of data, but setup data that was arranging the type of services, the type of call.
Would that matter in terms of the infringement charge here? That is, maybe it's theoretically possible that something that one might call data is carried, and that's not really excluded by the passage in the spec, but never the voice or the email or whatever it is. But maybe that dispute is immaterial to the charge of infringement. Can you enlighten?
If I understand your question correctly, Your Honor, I think it is immaterial to the charge of infringement. And the reason is the purpose behind the invention. Going back to column one, which first said that the short code is the invention, it explains why the short code is the invention. There are two things that they were trying to accomplish. This is at Appendix 144, 966 patent, column one. Continuing the paragraph that we read from before, which says that the improved detection time allows a faster ramp-up of the initial transmit power from the subscriber unit while reducing the unnecessary power overshoot. The point is they were trying to get the ramp accomplished as quickly as possible, and the way to do that was to send a naked code, a code not modulated by data. You modulate the signal by data, it becomes a longer signal. It takes more time to transmit. If you just transmit a naked code, you can complete that ramp-up faster, which moves on to the next step of setting up the call faster, and because it happens faster.
But there's some lower limit, right? Because what the base station? What the base station is looking for is not just any little ping, but a ping with enough information to identify, I know who to communicate back with and send the pilot code back, right?
A pattern. The pilot code is always transmitting, but you're right. The base station is looking for a pattern.
A pattern.
That it can recognize.
And that's why the longer the code, the more time it takes for the base station to read through it, to use a shorthand, to figure out if the pattern is there. And if you send it something shorter, it'll take less time, and so you can send more of them quickly and overshoot less, right?
That's exactly right. And InterDigital was trying to reduce that down to the bare minimum, the shortest that could be sent. That was in the form of a short code, not modulated by data.
Can I take you back to the question I asked earlier, which is assuming we were to agree with some variation of your analysis of the claim construction, and your answer, I recall, to whether or not it's a reversal or a remand was that it shouldn't be a remand because they shouldn't get a third bite at the apple. Is there some legal principle attached to they shouldn't get a third bite at the apple? I mean, what they would want is a jury trial to put on arguably new and different evidence to try to prove their case of infringement. What precludes them from having the right to do that?
Well, Your Honor, I can't cite a specific case that says they can't do that, except to say that we've been through this twice. They've been up to this court twice previous to today. They withdrew the second appeal. The issue has been tried and tried again, and they have, except for this jury trial, which applied the wrong claim construction, they've lost every time. And at some point, my client begins to wonder, when is enough enough? When have we defended this enough times? I think that's why I point to the futility of going back to retread the same evidence of the same accused products, the same patents under the court's claim construction as adopted in InterDigital 2.
Like an exhaustion doctrine.
Yes, that would be one way to say it. And I think my time is running very short. I haven't gotten to the second issue. Very briefly on that, Your Honor, I think that regardless of the claim construction issue, the court should reverse the district court's denial of JMAL because the expert, Dr. Jackson in this case, basically misapplied the claims. He was looking for two codes from the same code generator instead of the same code, which is what the claim requires.
Well, tell me why the following understanding is wrong. And I thought from your brief, I was for a long time getting the idea that all that he was saying was it comes from the same generator, but the same generator runs independently for the first portion from the second portion. But then the red brief points to a number of passages in the joint appendix from, in particular, the 3G spec, which seem to indicate, as I understand it, that in fact the generator is given some inputs. Those inputs, in fact, produce or can produce, without changing the inputs, the whole thing. And the first portion, the first 2 to the 12th bits, are the first thing. And then when you want the second thing, you basically just continue. So it is actually the same code, not just from the same generator. It's different pieces of a singly generated string. Is that wrong?
It is, and because the string that you're pointing to is a theoretical sequence that's never actually generated. And InterDigital does not say that that theoretical sequence, which constitutes 33 million values, is the same code. They're pointing to two separate codes that are generated using that and say that those two separate things, those two separate codes are the same code because they come from the same code generator. Dr. Jackson admitted that the first code is defined as 4,096 bits in the standard. He admitted that the second code is defined as 38,400 bits in the standard. He admitted that the standard never defines the collective 42,496 bits as a code, and he admitted, shockingly, that no device ever takes those two and adds them together to the 42,000. His entire theory was premised on the fact that these two codes are coming from the same generator. He even called it a DVD player and said it's just like pressing pause. But the fact that the claims don't say same code generator, they say same code.
Thank you. We'll restore some rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, Max Grant for InterDigital. Just so we're clear, Your Honor, on that last point, the 847 patent doesn't say same code. Code, of course, is a sequence of bits or chips. It says portion of a code and remainder of a code, and that's what the 847 patent says. Judge Toronto, your question with regards to whether this data issue was contested is 100% right, and in fact, in the InterDigital 2 opinion at page 11 of the slip opinion, it says this argument would have been more effective.
The slip opinion? Do you by any chance have the FX, you know, the Fed appendix site? Or give a section number. I don't have the slip
opinion. That's fine, Your Honor. I don't have it at my fingertips. I apologize. I've been working on the original opinion. But what it says is the argument would have been more effective.
Tell us what the page is or something. Give us some comments.
Under what headings or something.
Yeah.
Under what headings? We're going to try to follow along.
Sure, Your Honor.
And we don't have the same version you have.
I understand. It's under discussion, the power ramp-up patents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It goes past the section, and then there's a couple block quotes.
Yeah.
Yep. And then it says, second, InterDigital argues. And then the paragraph initially, right after that, says, as an initial matter.
Okay,
it says, as an initial matter, this argument would have been more effective at challenging the commission's infringement analysis and not its claim construction. So you're right that issue wasn't live. My brother here talked about the same specification. That's true, but we have different claims. And one of the reasons the court, I think, was able to find that in the last InterDigital 2, on the distinct patents that it said were different, that those short codes were synonymous with what was claimed was every single asserted claim in both of those patents included the limitation where the preamble, the initial, where the successively sent transmission is shorter than the message. Every single one of them said that, and therefore the court treated the short code embodiment, one of two embodiments, as being coextensive with the claims. It's certainly possible that a patentee can limit its claims in a given patent to one of several disclosed embodiments. Here, in the 847 patent, that limitation is absent. And therefore, the claims in the 847 patent, which don't include this shorter than the message limitation, have to be broad enough to include that first embodiment, the access code. I think Mr. McMahon is wrong.
Can I ask, if the access code is covered by the sending or transmitting language in this patent. What is the message that is also part of the claim that is in any way described in the spec?
So there's no question in the description of the access code, which starts at column 6, line 1, and goes on, as the court noted, for a column and a half, that is distinct from the message, and it describes it as being distinct. And what it describes is the access code functioning in the same way that the second description of the short code embodiment, the same function that the short codes are using. And so it's wrong to say that the entire invention is limited to short codes. That access code embodiment includes the power ramp-up feature. Now, we can...
Does the column in the patent that describes the first embodiment, the access code embodiment,
yes,
also speak of message or not?
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
And so what is it indicating that the message is that's must be over and above the access code?
Sure, Your Honor. It says in column 7, around line 26, it continues to increase the output transmission level until it receives a detection indication from the base station. And then it goes on to say that the subscriber unit and longer call setup time. And so what it does in exactly the same way as the short codes are described is the access code is used to reach out to the base station until it receives an indication from the base station. Once it receives that indication from the base station, the power ramp-up process concludes, and then the subsequent message is provided. Now, the issue here, Your Honor, it's very important that the court understand the distinction in the intrinsic record. Okay, in the InterDigital 2 case, we did not have the prosecution history, which ZTE neglects to mention in its gray brief, that expressly removed a carry no data limitation from the claims. In the 847 patent, the original claims included a no data limitation, and then those were canceled and replaced with claims, some of which have a data limitation and some of which don't. Now, that modifier, just like the steel of the baffles and Phillips, needs to be given meaning. Similarly, in the 966, the carry no data limitation was included in claims, and they were all canceled. And the subsequent claims that replaced them lacked that limitation. In order to give meaning to that prosecution history, what we have here is the exact opposite of an express disclaimer. We have an express claimer, where InterDigital went out of its way to say that limitation, we want it out of some of the claims, and indeed in the 966, all of the claims. So that intrinsic record was not present in the InterDigital 2 case, and when this court ruled that those are distinct patents, when we try to argue based on that that presence in some claims but not in other claims, this court said, well, those are distinct patents, and it doesn't weigh. And in fact, I think if the court looks at that and looks at also the distinct evidentiary record that was present in that ITC case, it will see that in that case, as the court relied on, it was expert testimony equating the successively sent transmissions with the short code. There's no evidentiary basis to come to that conclusion here, and I think the court correctly, somewhat reluctantly, found that the claims were limited to the short codes because they all included that express language and because the evidentiary record from the expert equated those. That basis isn't here. And so what we need to do here, I would respectfully submit, is, you know, when a football team has trouble, they go back to blocking and tackling. And when courts face tough issues, they should return to first principles. So claim terms are presumed to have their plain meaning. There's no dispute that the district court's construction, both sides agree, is the plain meaning. They're trying to have it be something other than the plain meaning. First principles, terms should be interpreted so that the words of the claim, both asserted and unasserted, have full meaning. Phillips and the steel baffles. Here, in the 847 patent, it's not just that there are some claims that include the no carry data limitation. They expressly say and wherein the transmitted signals, antecedent basis is the successively transmitted signals, carry no data. That's an express limitation that that my brother would have read out of the claims. First principles. The limitations should not be read into claims absent a clear and unmistakable disclaimer. I would submit that this court struggled with the specification in InterDigital 2, and more importantly, in InterDigital 1, which dealt with these precise patents, that court ruled correctly that these claims on this intrinsic record were not limited by the very same preferred embodiment. And as I said, not only does the specification not support a clear and unmistakable disclaimer of these claims on this record, but the prosecution history supports just the opposite. It supports a finding that InterDigital went out of its way to ensure claim scope that included signals, successively transmitted signals that did carry data, because they changed the claims to reflect that. And indeed, if you look at the prosecution history, you'll see that the examiner, in permitting and allowing the claims, made a distinction for the claims that had the carry no data limitation. He used that as a basis to distinguish the prior art. And in the claims that lacked that express limitation, he didn't say anything about it. And he distinguished the claims from the prior art on another basis. Last, first principle, claims should not be interpreted to exclude embodiments in the specification. The court's exactly correct that the access code, first embodiment, says expressly that the access code is a spreading code. And as this court has ruled, spreading codes can be either modulated or unmodulated. Importantly, the 010 patent, incorporated by reference, which was not adequately developed in the InterDigital 2 case, and we took the court's dressing down to heart, and we ensured it was adequately developed in this case. It was argued extensively at claim construction. It was part of the record. The experts testified about it, and the court included it in the evidentiary record, knowing it would be important for appeal. That 010 patent has exactly the kind of data that you're talking about, Your Honor, where it's not the modulated voice signal, but it's an information indicating channels that are used for different indications. So the way these phones really work is, whether it's access codes or short codes or preambles, there are no initial handshake codes that include modulated voice data. It just doesn't exist. But they include all kinds of other data and information about whether it's a 911 call and should be given priority over all other calls. That data is expressly claimed, that implementation is expressly claimed in the 010 patent. It was argued at claim construction extensively and was part of what was presented to Judge Andrews as a basis for not limiting the successively transmitted signals to ones that carried no data and an importation of a specific embodiment in the disclosure.
Can I return to a question I asked you earlier? And this has to do with trying to figure out whether, even putting aside InterDigital 2, whether if we were to read the claims here, say of the 966, just focus on that,
yes,
which includes the, you know, sending a, you know, transmission signal and then later on a message after the signal has been recognized, basically.
Yes.
If we were to read that to cover the full access code embodiment, what meaning would be left to the message language in that claim? And because I guess I was just reading in column 6 and half of 7 before one gets to the preferred embodiment. I don't see in this tiny print the word message in there.
Because what we're the process, Your Honor, is there's an initial sending of what's called a preamble in the products. In the specification, it's either the short code or the access code. That's sent at an increasing power level until the base station sees it and the subscriber unit or the handset receives an acknowledgement. That receipt of an acknowledgement is expressly disclosed in both implementations. Once the acknowledgement is received, then the message is sent. And what that message does is set up the call. So, right, so the first access code or short code is done literally to create a communication link at the correct power level. And then, once the acknowledgement from the base station comes, I can hear you, then the message is sent that sets that up. So where it's explained in the specification, Your Honor, is when it says the base station sends an acknowledgement. Until the base station sends an acknowledgement, no message is sent and no message would be sent. It's that message that includes the information for the call setup. And to be clear, that also doesn't include the actual voice data, the information that would you would call the package or the payload of the communication. So,
will you run out of time?
Of course.
One quick question that's a tag on to what we discussed with your friend, which is if we happen to disagree with you on the claim construction, you don't make an argument that the jury verdict on infringement should stand, even on the different claim construction, right? You recognize
that? Well, Your Honor, I think the case has to be remanded for an interpretation of this term data. And you know, there's two views of what data means. There's no debate, and I think the record is clear, and perhaps Judge Andrews would enter JMAL in our favor. But I don't think there's any debate that there's call setup information, channel identification information in that initial preamble that's sent by the accused of products. If he construes data as being that, as it's set forth in the 010 patent, then I think he could issue infringement, finding of infringement based on the existing record as a matter of law. If data means the baseband signal, the actual substantive payload, then we'd have a very different issue. And I think there's probably no handset that I'm aware of that operates in that way. And the other point I would make, Judge Toronto, is in the Interdigital One opinion, again, at page 6 of the slip opinion, it says, on receipt of the access code, the base station searches through the phases of the access code to acquire the correct phase, and then that enables the data communication, right? So that's the point. With regards to the same code issue, what I would say, Your Honor, is the record is complete. The citations are on pages 46, 47, 51, 52 of the red brief. Dr. Jackson testified that the infringing devices always use the first 42,496 chips. That's a portion and a remainder. The code is the same sequence of chips. Mr. McMahon keeps saying the word same code, but properly construed, and that construction was in Interdigital One, code or signal means sequence of chips. So it needs to be the same sequence. It doesn't have to be an identical code. Dr. Kakaias, who is here today, in the middle of page 51 of the red brief, has the impeachment testimony where he admitted that those 42,000 are the same long scrambling code, and where he said once the shift registers are frozen without a gap, it starts again with the same sequence of chips. The Qualcomm documents that are listed on page 48 of the red brief expressly say the scrambling code for the message corresponds to the, quote, same scrambling code that's used for construction of the preamble, and the source code, which is cited at page 48 of the red brief, also says that C-long-1-N is a single code. I would submit to the court that if the court returns to first principles, affirmance of this case is straightforward and completely consistent with the decisions in Interdigital 1 and Interdigital 2. In the unlikely event that the court seeks to review that claim construction, I agree that the issue has to be remanded for the district court to evaluate what data means. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. McMahon will restore 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few brief points. First, on the prosecution history, ZTE did address the prosecution history in the gray brief. That's at pages 16 to 17. And the arguments that Interdigital made in the briefs were about reasons for allowance. We addressed that in the gray brief. What my friend Mr. Grant said today about amendments and such were not in the briefs, but none of that matters because I agree with Mr. Grant that the court should return to first principles. And the first principle is that when a patentee says something clearly in their patent, the public can rely on it. In this case, the patentee said twice that the present invention involves the transmission of short codes. Those are two very clear statements of the type that this court uniformly says patentees should be held to. That's a first principle.
What do you make of the first sentence of column 6? In a first embodiment of the present invention, et cetera, and that's, I think, undisputedly not about short codes.
Your Honor, I agree with that, and like I said before, I think there is a tension there, but I don't think that can overcome the two very clear statements that the present invention involves the transmission of short codes. On the question of the 010 patent, there are a lot of things that my friend Mr. Grant said today about the 010 patent that I don't think appear in that patent. But let me just read one thing from the 966 patent, the common patent specification in this case. There are two places where that patent refers to the 010 patent, never by number, just by name, because they were simultaneously filed. But this is Appendix 148, Column 9. The 966 patent says, a detailed description of the selection and updating of the short codes is outside the scope of this invention. However, such a detailed description is disclosed in the related application and then refers to the 010 patent. So the details of the 010 patent should not drive the claim construction here of these claims.
Okay, can I ask you one other question about the specification? Is the term message used in the description in the spec of one or the other or both of the two embodiments?
The message would be transmitted in both of the embodiments, and I think, Your Honor, the clearest indication of that is figures 5 and 7.
Five goes with the first embodiment of, let's call it, the invention, and 7 goes with the second, with the short one?
Yes, and as I understand it, the message would be transmitted.
Yes, so I was actually asking a question about the word message, which doesn't seem to appear in figures 5 or 7, and whether that word appears in columns 6 through, let's say, 10, in describing either the first embodiment or the preferred embodiment.
Your Honor,
if you don't know, it's easy enough for me to check.
I believe it does. I don't think I could find it any more quickly than Mr. Grant did. The last thing I would say regarding the interplay between interdigital 1 and 2, I think this was addressed very succinctly in the gray brief at page 20.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Besides, the case is submitted.